Hi, everybody. This is Jack Moslem with NCPA. Welcome back to Independent RX Forum. I'm here today with Rana Hauser and Lisa Schwarz, both of whom run our regulatory policy shop. And it's been busy. We've got a lot to talk about with Track and Trace. And so I don't want to delay. Rana and Lisa, how are you guys?
Great, Jack. Thanks for having us.
Doing good. Good to be here.
So, Rana, why don't we get started with the conversation?
Sure. Well, I'm happy to set the stage, and I'll be interviewing Lisa with some important questions that she can respond to and help our members be ready to implement Track and Trace. The law was passed 10 years ago. So the law was signed in 2013. This was a big law for pharmacy. This was the Drug Quality and Security Act. It had two separate sections, one of which focused on compounding and the other which focused on the Drug Supply Chain Security Act, or DSCSA for short. So now that this law has been in effect for 10 years, we're coming to a point in time where many of the requirements in the law have already gone into effect. The remaining requirements will be in effect come November 27th of this year. So November 27th, 2023 is a date the independent pharmacy should be aware of to make sure you're in compliance with the DSCSA law. So just wanted to let our audience know about the purpose of the DSCSA and then get into the nitty-gritty details about what independent pharmacies need to be doing to make sure they're in compliance. So the purpose of the DSCSA was to implement an interoperable electronic tracing of products at the package level, you know, throughout the supply chain by 2023. So what does this mean? This means there needs to be electronic exchange of transaction information for each sale of prescription drugs. And for our members, that means from the point of sale, from the wholesaler to the independent pharmacy that's purchasing the drugs. Product identifiers have to be used to verify product down to the package level. There has to be a prompt response to suspect and illegitimate products when found. And this process is geared towards improving the efficiency of recalls. So in addition to that interoperable electronic tracing of products at the package level, the law also called for establishment of national standards for licensure for wholesale distributors and third-party logistics providers. So really the point of this law was to preempt state pedigree laws. If you'll go back many years in time, certain states such as California had put their own laws into effect. And this federal law was really, to supersede those or preempt those and to say there's going to be one national standard for electronic tracing and there's going to be one national standard for licensure for wholesale distributors. So let's fast forward. Again, what's covered under the law, these are prescription drugs in finished dosage form. Okay. So not covered are things such as over-the-counter medications, medical devices, drugs indicated for animal use. Those are not included in this. So things such as blood components that are used for transfusion, radioactive drugs, imaging drugs, IV products, compounded drugs, those are not covered under this law. But let's get into what dispensers need to know. Dispensers need to be able to look at product tracing data. They need to be able to understand a product with serialized IDs. They need to understand who the authorized trading partners are, and then they need to be able to verify that product. So Lisa, let's get into dispenser requirements related to product tracing. Can you go over some simple points for our members on what they need to do when it comes to product tracing?
Yeah, the first few years of the law were some of the upstream folks getting their ducks in order so that the distributors and dispensers would be able to do product tracing. So pharmacies should be seeing coming in the door just about everything having that 2D barcode or data matrix on it, which is the machine readable version of the product identifier, which is like a combination of the NDC, a serial number, a lot number, and an expiration date. So one of the obligations that dispensers have is only accepting products that have those compliant identifiers or products that are grandfathered, so they were manufactured and labeled before the manufacturer had that requirement, or they're excluded, some of the things that Rana mentioned earlier, OTCs, compounds like that, or the manufacturer has a waiver for the package. We would love to have a list of all of those packages. We don't. That's something that we have asked FDA, like, this would help our members comply. But that might be something where the package is just too small to have all of that information on it in like a readable size. So that's a current requirement that's pretty important. Along with that, the next thing that helps us with product tracing is accepting tracing data. So right now, pharmacies have an obligation to accept tracing data for every package that comes in the door. A lot of our members, probably most of our members, are have a service agreement with their wholesaler to hold that data on their behalf. Some of our members may also be working with a DSCSA solution provider to collect that from multiple distributors and organize that and make it searchable, make it easy for them to respond to any tracing requests that they might get from another trading partner or from a regulator or potentially auditor. And that data has to be kept. You have to maintain access to that for 6 years. There's no requirement for what format it needs to be. So totally fine if it's all electronic, totally fine if it's all paper, but I mean, I cannot imagine, you wouldn't want to download that and print that out. Like, that's not a practical way to be able to respond to a tracing request. So I think that gets on the product tracing data requirements. Do you want me to go on, or did you have more comments, Rana?
Yeah, Lisa, I think another good question would be, you know, our members know that they're only supposed to accept ownership of products with the DSCSA compliant identifier. Mm-hmm. Can you go into a little more detail on what that compliant identifier on products looks like?
Yep. So the compliant identifier is typically going to have a machine readable, so something you can scan with like a barcode scanner, so machine readable, and then something that's also human readable. So the machine readable aspect is going to look like a 2D barcode or a QR code. I think that's really common in some like restaurant applications, but it's a there's a bit more information that can be conveyed in the data matrix. So typically something that you need to have a 2D barcode scanner to be able to read that to get that information. That will be important if your dispensing system is going to adopt any process for you to retain that that information in a dispensing record. It is not required by the law, but there are some practical reasons to do that, and we can maybe talk about that later if there's time. But then the other part of the DSCSA compliant identifier is the human readable part. So the NDC, going to be a serial number, an expiration date, and a lot number. And right now, we're really familiar with seeing NDC numbers, expiration dates, lot numbers. That gives us lot level traceability. So if there's a recall, you know, it's just an affected lot that gets pulled back. The DSCSA, once everything is, all of the implementation dates have passed, that serial number is what gives us information about a specific package, a bottle of a drug. We would be able to find out if at any point that serial number had ever left the secure supply chain, like if it had ever been reported lost or stolen by, you know, a distributor or manufacturer, if somehow it makes its way back in to the supply chain, you know, scanning, doing a verification of the package ID would lead us to say this is actually a legitimate product and I need to report that to FDA.
Gotcha. Super, super helpful. And we know that some of the other dispenser requirements revolve around only dealing with authorized trading partners. Can you let the audience know how they ensure that they're only dealing with these authorized trading partners?
Yeah, it takes a bit of legwork for the pharmacy. If you're doing this on your own, you're making sure that anybody that you buy drug from, so a wholesale distributor or potentially another pharmacy in certain circumstances, but making sure that anybody you buy drug from, a distributor, is licensed in your state if your state requires it. And that might be the Board of Pharmacy, Board of Commerce. There's different states regulate wholesalers different ways, but that they are also registered with FDA. And if there's a database that FDA maintains, and anybody can go and query that, and you'll find the list there. You can make sure that your distributor, their warehouse is set up for you. There are certain circumstances where a pharmacy can buy drug from another pharmacy. So the law calls everybody a dispenser, but pharmacy to pharmacy. And this needs to happen when there's a specific patient that drug is going to be purchased and dispensed to. And in that case, you want to make sure that the pharmacy that you're buying from is a licensed pharmacy, that they actually exist. Now, I think a lot of us literally know the pharmacist on the other end of that transaction. But if there's a circumstance where you're buying it through, say, like an online marketplace, you might want to take some extra steps to make sure that the seller is an authorized trading partner.
So now we know how to ensure that your partner is an authorized trading partner where you're getting your drug supply from. Let's go and dig into product verification. So after you've identified suspect product, what steps do you take on that suspect product?
Sure. If there was something about when I was doing order check-in that made me think I need to look further into making sure that this is the product that I think I'm really buying, verification today is going to possibly be a slow and kind of manual process. It might involve some emails and phone calls, trying to track down where that serial number has been. You have some clue in the tracing data that you have when you receive the package. You're going to find out in the transaction history the stops that package made on its way to you. But if there's still some reason you want to verify the package ID, it's probably going to involve reaching out to the wholesaler or potentially reaching out to the manufacturer to do that kind of tracing, that verification. After November of this year, we're assuming that everything is implemented on time. That can be done electronically. So you would use whatever your verification vendor is. There are going to be several companies that are offering those sorts of solutions. So pay attention to advertisements for those sorts of products. If you're seeing DSCSA verification, like advertisements for vendors for that, pay attention, investigate them. You do need to be able to do this in November. You should be making plans for that. But once it's electronic, it's a bit simpler to do. You can find out much quicker. It's me typically within 24 hours. That's the compliance requirement. If you have illegitimate product, or if what you thought was suspect is actually product that can be cleared and moved into the dispensing inventory.
Great. And let's go back to the 5% exemption. That's existed for quite some time, where if you're 5% or less of your sales, you as a pharmacy were exempted from a wholesale distributor permit. Can you go into that a little bit and what happened with that 5% exemption?
Yeah, the 5% exemption for most intents and purposes has gone away. If I need to buy, if I need to buy or borrow product from another dispenser in town, that I can do if there is, again, that specific patient need. If I'm literally buying it to dispense it to a patient, and I could, as potentially documentation of claiming that exemption, give the other pharmacy, the seller, the prescription number that it goes to. You know, that, you know, potentially at one point could have been part of that 5% wholesaling exclusion, but that doesn't exist anymore. If there's no specific patient need, if I'm just buying it to manage my inventory and they're selling it to manage their inventory, all of the DSCSA conditions apply. They would have to be, they would potentially have to be registered in their state to be wholesaling it to me. They would have to register with FDA and they would have to provide tracing data to me. There is, however, if dispensers are selling to a practitioner for office use, then there is a 5%, if you can't exceed 5% of your annual sales in drug that's going to a practitioner for their office use. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Lisa, I think it does. And another important point is interoperability does go into effect November 27th, 2023. That's the implementation date that is in front of us as an industry to really get this law implemented in full. Now, the problem is that electronic verification is not widely available at present time. So to Lisa's point earlier, most pharmacies are going to need to rely on a DSCSA solution provider to manage tracing data and verification requests. Now, I will say that something for our listeners to be aware of, and again, we have this impending November 27th deadline. Something for everyone to be aware of is that FDA still has some steps to take to implement this law. And one of those is very important for NCPA members. FDA is supposed to do a small dispenser assessment to assess the readiness and the availability and the cost to compliance for small dispensers with this law. And FDA has not yet done that assessment. So we are very anxious to see FDA come out publicly with their plans for this assessment. I would just tell our audience today to still move forward and be ready to implement this law on November 27th, but also realize that FDA still has an assessment to do before this law could be fully implemented.
That's a great reminder.
Yeah, Lisa, and I'll turn it over to you to talk about some of our resources that we have for our members that we tried to make this as easy as possible for our members, and we have put together some great resources I wanted Lisa to talk about.
Yeah, the resources really address helping pharmacies comply with the existing requirements. We have one last one that we're headed towards in November, but there really are plenty of things now that you need to require. And I went over some of those, the tracing data, the package IDs and authorized trading partners. So the resources that we have help you formalize some procedures that you probably already have at your pharmacy. So it's spring and a lot of us are probably dealing with potholes on our commute to and from work. I think you might have some potholes in your order check-in process, the way that you have that written up as a procedure. You might need to go take a look at that, fill in those potholes, you know, make sure that your procedure addresses everything that's required for DSCSA compliance, so that you have smooth driving, you have smooth operations going forward. We've worked with some other pharmacy and supply chain organizations to put everything in a one spot. So anything that you might need to learn or to get access to, such as NCPA's DSCSA compliance checklist, and SOP template, so SOP is standard operating procedure. This is a URL, so this is a website. Go to dscsa.pharmacy. So dscsa.pharmacy is a website. You go there, and you can see a timeline of when each of the dispenser requirements went into effect. You can access some education materials and then also the NCPA checklist.
Great. Thanks for that practical advice, Lisa. I wanted to cover one more thing before we wrap today. Something that you've likely seen, our listeners have likely seen out in the marketplace, is a request for a pharmacy to have a global location number or a GLN. Can you talk about that a little bit more, Lisa?
Great call out. The GLN is like a digital, well, it's an ID number that is a representation of an address. So in the like global shipping technology, in the same way that your NCPDP number identifies you for submitting pharmacy prescription claims, your GLN identifies you as a location that somebody could ship something to you and know sort of the ownership is implied in the way that the GLN is assigned. So your suppliers are going to be asking you for a GLN. If you don't have one, there's a pretty simple process of getting one, but there is also a good chance that if you're working with one of the four wholesalers that participate in the GS1 managed GLN program, so GS1 is the organization that issues the GLNs. So if you're a customer of Amerisource, Cardinal, McKesson, or Smith Drug, those are the four companies that, as of today anyway, are participating in that managed GLN program, and they may have already obtained one on your behalf. And you just need to go into probably your ordering portal, maybe your account in your ordering portal, to look for a GS1 if they've posted it there for your reference, or to contact your customer support and ask them to provide that to you so that you can share it with other prescription drug suppliers.
Great. Thanks, Lisa. So to wrap up here, we want our listeners to know NCPA has partnered with many of our partners in the supply chain on a helpful website for you. That website is dscsa.pharmacy. You can find NCPA's standard operating procedures checklist on that website, and you can find a lot of other helpful tips. So to wrap up today, some key takeaways: make sure you're only dealing with authorized trading partners. Make sure you utilize inspection and investigation procedures. And again, make sure you're maintaining records of transaction data, suspect product investigations, et cetera. So I want everyone to know that we are a resource for you at NCPA. Happy to help you. If you have any questions, reach out to us.